This stock and commodity report is made possible with support from Grainfield Marketing in Normal. Grainfield Marketing can be reached at 1-800-383-4647 or on the internet at grainfield.com.
Welcome to the Closing Market Report. It's May the 18th, 2006. I'm Todd Gleason. In a few moments, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Dale Durkles of AgriVisor Services in Bloomington, Illinois. And we'll discuss the cash grain market today with Bill Mayer. He's at the Grain Elevator located in Lexington. In agricultural news, the capital gains tax relief has been extended another couple of years, and some fresh news on the biodiesel front. We'll have details of these and other stories shortly. Also this half hour, we'll hear from the extension entomologist Kevin Steffi. He's some views on the insects corn farmers need to be watching for. Just after the bottom of the hour, of course, meteorologist Peter Levitt will join us to take a look at the agricultural weather forecast. It all happens on this Thursday edition of your Closing Market Report.
The Closing Market Report is made possible by AgriGold Hybrids, funding agricultural programming on AM 580 as an additional service to the many AgriGold customers in the AM 580 listening area. AgriGold, the corn specialists, on the web at a6395.com and at agrigold.com.
In Chicago on this Thursday afternoon, futures finished the day like this. July wheat at $4.18.5 off 4.5 today. September futures were down $2, or rather down 2.25 cents at $4.31.5. July wheat in Kansas City, $5.06.25. They were off a quarter for the day. Corn pit now, July contract $2.60.25, down 2.75. September futures at $2.71.25. They were off 2.75 today. And the December contract off a penny and a half at $2.85.25. March futures in the corn pit, $2.94.25, off 1.25. July soybean futures, $5.98. They're down 6. The August off 5.5 at $6.04.5. And the SEPs were at $6.10.5 on the settlement price today at 5 lower. November contract, $6.21 a bushel, off 4.5 cents. Bean meal futures, $175.30 for the July contract, down $1.10. July bean oil at $25.57. They're off 25 for the day. Feeder cattle now. May contract at the Mercantile Exchange, $103.50. They're off a nickel. June live cattle at $77.80 a hundredweight, up 7.5 cents. And the lean hogs, June contract 22.5 higher today at $67.92.5. The outside markets, crude oil at $69.45 a barrel in the June contract, up 76. The CRB index at 348.70. Down 0.68 for the day, and the dollar at 84.58 at this hour. Dow Jones Industrial Average down 5 points at 11,200 even.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Joining us now to take a look at what happened to the Chicago Board of Trade and the Mercantile Exchange and the Kansas City Board of Trade is Dale Durkles of AgriVisor Services in Bloomington, Illinois. He's filling in this afternoon for Dan Zwicker. Good afternoon to you, Dale. Thanks for filling in today.
Good afternoon, Todd.
Tell me about the bean market to begin with and your view of where this market might be headed.
Well, the bean market, you know, is probably the least favored of all the markets at the Board of Trade, of the wheat and the corn and the beans. And I think it's because the fundamental structure of beans, no matter which way you look at it, is the weakest. So beans really have become a follower. Technically, you've got a few little difficulties to play with here. You know, when you look at nearby futures, we had some interim highs here back in January and February. I think it was at 6.25. So anytime we poke up in there, you know, the market's just got some natural resistance set against it. And no matter which way you cut the cake at this particular juncture, you've still got a fairly sizable inventory that's going to be coming out of South America at some point. Things are going to tighten up a little bit here for a while because of some of the protests and tightening supplies at the ports, but sooner or later it's going to come. So the beans probably really need some help from something else to really get the ball rolling.
It used to be that, was a month and a half or 2 months ago, and the previous year and a half or 2 years prior to that, that the beans were leading the market. They were the favored child of the index funds. They're still holding strong to some of those gains that were made over that time. Have the funds stopped investing in the bean market, or is it just that the fundamentals have taken over in other areas of the Board of Trade?
Well, when you look at, you know, the new asset class, the index funds, you know, beans have not garnered, it doesn't look like, as much money out of that group of investors as what the wheat or the corn has at this point. Because there's been a lot more volatility over in the wheat and the corn pits, you've got more of the spec funds involved over there, too. And so I think it's just the nature of the beast at this juncture. You know, and actually, when you look at corn and wheat at this point, you know, wheat's still really the leader of the parade, especially as you step down and look at the real leadership in the wheat market, which is still in Kansas City.
Were we operating misguided a bit on the idea that the index funds would simply continue to buy beans because that's what they had been doing, and that they really are much more capable of deciding which of these commodities that they can get in and, I suppose, out of on a regular basis?
You know, one of the things, and I've read a couple of things here over the last couple of years that I thought was rather interesting, and it doesn't mean they're going to shun beans, but they've tended to favor corn and even to a certain degree the wheat over top the beans, and what they're looking for is markets that are liquid and deep. And yeah, the beans can be a real volatile market. They can make a lot of money, they can be real splashy, but they're looking at a market that has lots of underlying liquidity and value in it, and the corn market especially fits that bill, so they've tended to look at that. And that's an argument altogether different than the energy argument that people talk about in the corn. And the wheat even a little bit more so, or maybe even a little bit more so than the beans when you put them all together. But the wheat, the other thing I think it tends to attract them, it's something of a universal type crop, grown not only in virtually every state here in the U.S., but, you know, grown in a lot of countries in the world. So you're looking at an aggregate sense of a crop that is very deep, very liquid, and so you've got it traded a lot of places, and a lot of places they can reach out and attain some ownership for it. So, you know, the beans have been a little bit less favored by some of these index funds. I don't think that's really a knock on the beans. That's just, you know, they're looking at reality.
When you say liquid and deep, I'm guessing that you mean that in terms of, well, there's a lot of volume in it, but just in terms of the number of bushels that are available, maybe part of the deep too. Is that right?
I mean, it not only is just the number of bushels available; it's also the consistent number of bushels that are traded on a daily basis. In terms of volume on a broad scale, you know, and it's not just here. When you look at wheat here, you have to look at Kansas City, Chicago, and Minneapolis all together. But, you know, we trade wheat relatively liquid over in Europe and some spots and some other places too. So, I mean, they're looking at a very broad scale base when they're looking at this.
Okay, since the wheat is leading the market, tell me about it technically at this point.
The biggest thing I'll say technically, and it has to do with Kansas City. Kansas City wheat is at the nearby contract is at the highest level it's been since April in 1997. And to be honest, the high we put in place on today, on Thursday, 514, was that 1997 high. And once you eclipse that, you got wheat in Kansas City that basically has technically not a lot between it and those $7 prices we enjoyed back in 1996. So, you know, you got a market here that really is very close to just leaping up over top some important levels. The Chicago contract, we had a high in 2003, I think, on the nearby at 424. We've eclipsed that, but we had a high in 2002 at 434. So, you know, we're really nudging Chicago up against some areas that once you trip over that, then you start talking about the 1996 price levels in wheat in Chicago. So I think there's some things that are just overhead that are real important in the complex.
And what do we need to watch fundamentally? And we've got some high temperatures that are due out.
You said it all.
That's
Mother Nature is all that matters in this game right now. And wheat,
does
you know,
it not matter
and, you
that
know,
it's hard red and soft red winter wheat? And two different conditions?
It's hard red that you're really keeping an eye on, you know, and one of the subtle things that you got to kind of keep an eye on, it hasn't cropped up yet, but you don't want to ignore it because it still can. That's disease problems back here in the Midwest.
Mm-hmm.
With the soft red crop, and you know we're in a period where you need to be watching it pretty darn closely. There is a, and I haven't gone out there this week and looked at it, there is a website out at the University of Penn State University. That basically monitors conditions for the flourishing of scab. and talks about the probability that the weather conditions themselves would tend to favor or not favor scab. I just haven't looked at it this week. But with the kind of moisture we've had this year, you know, we've really got to be on the alert and look out for that.
Yeah, most of our producers may or may not have grown in this area, may not have grown wheat and don't realize how quickly a wheat disease can get hold of a crop. I was talking to Suzanne Bissonnette last week, and I'll air this probably tomorrow or next week, early one of the two, about wheat diseases, and only 1% of the crop has to be infected before it's expected that they'll start to spray for those diseases. So these things can get in and do some damage apparently really quickly in these crops.
Oh, it can. I mean, wheat disease, I mean, it's just kind of like it just explodes on the horizon all at once. And it comes right at, generally a lot of them come right at flowering time too. So you really have to be real diligent and watch out for it, no doubt about it. And that may be kind of the sleeper in looking at the soft red crop that, you know, people have kind of fallen asleep on. All the attention's been focused out in the western plains and the dry weather and the heat, and that's going to come back this week. But, you know, we could walk in someday and somebody could say, hey, we got scab or something else down in southern Illinois, and, you know, we're off to the races with the soft red crop that people thought at one point was going to be a good crop.
Okay, let's say that this continues to move higher, or at least it holds at these levels. Can it manage to hold a corn crop that probably is going to show up in pretty decent condition on Monday next week?
You know, I think people are so focused on looking ahead at the corn crop and looking at different things next year. I don't know that the crop condition ratings, at least these early ones,
are
all that important. Well, it's not just ethanol. You know, I mean, we've got, you know, a number dialed in here with yield to 149 bushels an acre, and some people say it can be two or three bushels higher. Some people think that, you know, acreage could be up another million. So you add another 400 million or something, and you're still working with a 1.5 carryout with what you're looking at as being a very good crop. And so, you know, you really have to understand we are bringing things down, and meanwhile we're having people look at this whole complex here, not just as ethanol, but also looking at it as being one that, you know, we really don't have that much comfort room. A lot of people don't realize the world numbers last Friday were the most bullish aspect of the USDA supply-demand numbers. Stocks-to-use ratio on wheat, worldwide basis, the tightest they have been since World War II. Corn, or I should say coarse grains, stocks-to-use ratios, and this is implied on the USDA estimates, they're a little bit tighter than they were back in 1973-74. We don't have any comfort margin out there, and people need to wake up to that fact. And because of that, I don't think corn's got a huge downside risk in it until at least we get a crop assured.
Are you willing as a scale-up seller at this point, or you just want to hang on? And where is AgriVisor in terms of new crop sales?
Well, we're roughly at 40% as a company, and, you know, I don't know that that's bad. The one thing we've really questioned some people against, we finally did make some very light sales on 07.
I wondered about that.
But that's the one thing I think people need to be careful about, is making those long-term sales out in the distance, even though prices are attractive. And, you know, you're looking out here at December 07 corn at 311, 08 at 323. But you want to remember, yeah, you're locking in a price that seems to be good, but I would ask every producer, what's your input cost? He can't tell you. And right now, when you're looking at what's going on with inflationary forces and energy prices still staying high, you're not going to find a whole lot of relief out there in terms of what your input costs are going to be. So you really have to tread carefully out there in the distance. And then you throw on top of this whole mix in here that, you know, if we have any kind of a problem in the world, there could be a mad scramble just to get corn supplies secured. And so it says, you know, be real careful about that stuff.
Well, sort of on that end, but on the flip side of it, what happens if we stay at 3 or at, you know, 270, 280, 290, I suppose, on the board? And I guess the basis hasn't really, and say the basis narrows up to something normal and we get up in that 260 range for cash prices. What happens to our livestock market? Can the chicken producers and the hog producers continue to buy corn and compete against ethanol? And where does all the DDG and all that kind of stuff go? We keep building these plans.
Well, that all is just one big, murky, muddy field. I will say this. people need to go back and take a look at what hog and cattle markets did back in the very early 1970s. We had a huge break, I remember, especially in hog futures back, and I think it culminated in 1974 when it had grains go splashily high. I mean, yeah, people were forced to go through a liquidation process back there. As I remember, cattle markets back in that period, along with that, got hit pretty hard as well. And so, you know, you're sitting here going, you know, these lessons from the past are still darned important lessons that people need to be aware of. And, yeah, we can have a lot of volatility in livestock, and we can put a lot of pressure on the livestock feeder. He may be forced out, but that industry is going to have to confront a new reality, and prices and operations and everything have to accommodate that at some point eventually.
And eventually that may mean higher food prices for the consumer.
You got that right.
Or somebody's going to like make a lot less margin, one of the two, I suppose.
If the money ain't there, nobody's going to produce the pork or the beef or even the chicken for that matter. And golly knows, chicken people are not having any fun as it is today anyway.
And this is different than 98 and 2002 in terms of what the potential is, because then I think it was a capacity problem for slaughter plants in the U.S.
Well, it was in the hog market at that particular juncture, really a plant margin capacity, but there were some other things that were involved in it as well. You look at 98, that came on the heels of 96. You know, we had $5 corn back then. We didn't last a long time, but at least it did have some short-term ramifications. But now, you know, the real threat that people in the livestock industry are sitting here trying to confront and figure out, you know, what it all means. Are we going to permanently go up to a higher price structure in some of this stuff in here because of competitive demand structure? And we've got the two big heavyweights in the grain industry right now very nicely arguing about this. Are we really looking at corn as a food and feed or as a fuel? You know, and I mean, there are a lot of things that can change over the next number of years that nobody has a good solid answer to. But
you mean Cargill and ADM?
Right.
You know, Cargill arguing on the food side and ADM arguing on the fuel side.
Right.
Okay.
But, you know, at some point here, we certainly have a livestock industry that's got to confront a reality if we go up to new higher price levels in grains. That's going to force a change in their operations. Initially, it says, okay, we have to pair our businesses back to some degree. That means less meat in the counter, less hamburger at McDonald's, and we no longer see the dollar value menus anymore. And, you know, the consumer at some point has to deal with higher food costs too. There was a big, I think yesterday was real critical and real important from the Consumer Price Index, because the core rate was up the second month in a row. It was up more than expected. And it finally did alert economists to the fact that, you know, these higher energy prices are starting to make their way through the broad-based economy now. Things will change.
Dale, we've spent all the time. Thanks much for joining us today.
Good talking to you.
Good talking to you, too. Dale Durkle's filling in for Dan Zwicker on this Thursday afternoon. Both of them, of course, are with AgriVisor Services out of Bloomington, Illinois. We've also blown through all the news time, so we'll just skip that here. And I've got some preparation that I need to make so we can talk to Bill Mayer. We'll hear from extension entomologist Kevin Steffing in just a moment.
Agricultural information on AM 580 is made possible with support from Lincoln Land Agri-Energy in Palestine, Illinois, producing a renewable fuel with corn bought directly from the farmer. More information at 800-586-2321 or online at lincolnlandagrienergy.com. The Carl Center for Rural Health and Farm Safety, a division of Carl Foundation Hospital, is proud to underwrite agricultural programming at WILL. The center helps residents of rural communities with education and training in farm safety. For more information, call 217-383-4606.
Let's take a look at what the weather forecast is from our own Ed Kieser before we get to what Kevin Steffi has to say about some of the insects corn farmers ought to be on the lookout for. A severe thunderstorm watch in effect for southeastern Indiana, by the way, until 8 o'clock this evening. Tonight, Ed says, in western Illinois, clear to partly cloudy skies. Elsewhere, to be partly to mostly cloudy. Some scattered showers, few isolated thunderstorms. Lows will range from around 40 in the far northern part of the two-state region to around 50 in the south. Tomorrow, in the north and central sections, partly to mostly sunny. Partly sunny with a few scattered showers in the south. Highs from tomorrow from 55 near Lake Michigan to 75 in the far south. Farmers and consultants scouting cornfields this spring have been calling the extension entomologist at the University of Illinois about white grubs. Kevin Steffi says they've been finding grubs in fairly high numbers in all parts of the state.
And they're encountering a lot of white grubs. Now, there's several species of white grubs, and we don't have identifications associated with all these reports, but we have some confirmed identifications of Japanese beetle grubs, which in some ways is a good thing, because when the soil has plenty of moisture, our experience has been Japanese beetle grubs do not feed on the corn roots. They feed on organic matter. It's only during pretty dry springs that the Japanese beetle grubs need to obtain more water, more moisture, and they start feeding on the corn roots. We've experienced that firsthand by putting out trials in fields loaded with Japanese beetle grubs and having no injury whatsoever for the reasons that I just indicated. So the fact that there are a lot of white grubs in a field may or may not mean anything. If they're Japanese beetle grubs and there's lots of moisture, it probably doesn't mean anything. On the other hand, if they are the so-called true white grubs, those are the ones with three-year life cycles, those can cause rather significant injury. And growers will want to keep their eyes open for that. If they've already planted, they just need to watch for signs of damage. There's nothing they can do about it now. But if they do have to replant and they have true white grubs in the field, they may want to use an insecticide at replant or a seed treatment.
The true white grubs emerge as May or June bugs, although there are some other grubs that are referred to by the same name as adults.
So we need to be able to separate those two as well. The true white grub with three-year life cycles is a great big, bigger than a Japanese beetle, dark brown, and sort of more oblong than round, whereas the mass chafer is more of a tan color and is a bit more round than it is oblong.
You can read more about white grubs and many other insects in this week's edition of the University of Illinois Bulletin. It's available online at www.ipm.uiuc.edu/bulletin. For University of Illinois Extension, I'm Todd Gleason. Time now for our look at the cash grain segment. Bill Mayer, Roach Ag Marketing out of Lexington, Illinois, joins us to take a look at that. Good afternoon to you, Bill. We appreciate you being with us.
Good afternoon, Todd.
Tell me about the marketplace in your area in terms of the cash price. Has it widened out as the price went higher this week?
Yep, basis has widened out. I think Kay mentioned yesterday on the segment that last Friday was probably one of the biggest days of buying in this area nationwide, I think. A lot of grain moved. So that's the first thing. The futures prices have gone up and made the cash price go up with it and continued to keep the movement going. You got your barge freights gone up and the river basis has dropped. And then you, in some areas at least, you have the farmer out of the field and he continues to deliver grain while he's not in the field and, you know, has time to get it done.
Why is it that the river freight, barge freights are going up at this point?
Well, I think it's a kind of a lag reaction to the, you know, the energy prices jumping there, just like we see at the gas pump here. You know, you still have some of the gasoline up there in that 285, 290 area, even though on the futures it's come down some since then. So I think it's just mainly a energy cost.
What's planting conditions around your area been like?
Well, it's rained for eight straight days now, measurable rain, so they really haven't done a whole lot. The last activity up here was really a week ago this past weekend. Those beans and corn that were planted that weekend are starting to poke through, and really Corn looks pretty good as it comes up. Good stands, nice and even. So I think things are in good shape. We'd like to get back in the field.
And your bid's there in Lexington, just north of Bloomington, Illinois.
$2.28 for cash corn, $5.63 for beans.
Thanks much. We appreciate it, Bill.
Thank you.
Bill Maris with Roach Ag Marketing out of Lexington joins us here on the Closing Market Report on Thursday afternoons. Time now for your regional newscast.
With this look at AM 580 News, I'm Jim Meadows. Champaign police have arrested a suspect in connection with an overnight shooting death. 20-year-old Leon Robinson of Urbana was arrested today in connection with the fatal shooting of Travis Marmion. Marmion died at Carl Hospital after being found with a gunshot wound in the 300 block of Ells Avenue in Champaign shortly after midnight. The mayor of Savoy doesn't see a smoking ban in his village anytime soon, despite the prospect of such a ban in neighboring Champaign and Urbana. Savoy has less than half a dozen bars and sit-down restaurants that would be affected by a smoking ban. But Mayor Bob McCleary says there's been no plans for debate on the issue there. Opponents of a smoking ban in Champaign-Urbana say customers will simply travel to Savoy and other nearby towns. The Illinois Board of Education voted unanimously today to stop using Harcourt Assessment to administer the Illinois Standards Achievement Test. The Texas company will still be used to design the test's format. Harcourt was late in delivering the test to schools or sent them the wrong tests. As a result, some schools had to delay the tests, and the school board does not expect to meet its June 1st goal for reporting results. The Indiana Department of Transportation is moving up the timetable for several big road construction projects. NDOT says upgrades of U.S. 31 will be completed around Kokomo by 2015 and south of South Bend by 2016. Construction to the I-69 extension will begin in Gibson County in 2008. Illinois' unemployment rate is holding steady at 5.1%. Compared to April of 2005, last month's rate is down 8-tenths of a percentage point. But state officials say job growth in April was the largest in 9 months. Illinois added more than 23,000 jobs in April. And since February, employers have added 43,600 jobs, the largest three-month gain since 1999. The Illinois Attorney General's office is going after a debt collection agency which customers say used unfair pressure tactics to obtain payments. Attorney General Lisa Madigan sued against Financial Credit Services of Palatine comes after receiving nearly 100 complaints from customers in 6 Illinois counties, including Champaign County. I'm Jim Meadows, AM 580 News.
Today's broadcast is made possible with support from First Midwest Bank, serving the banking needs of Illinois' agricultural community with locations in Champaign, Danville, Galesburg, Morris, and McHenry. More information is available from Bob Bastifer in Danville at 217-477-6016. First Midwest Bank, member FDIC, an equal housing lender.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report. I'm Todd Gleason, and this is WILL Urbana. It's a broadcasting service of the College of Communications here on the Urbana-Champaign campus of the University of Illinois. We're joined now by Pete Levitt, meteorologist, to take a look at the weather forecast across the nation and around the globe. Good afternoon to you, Pete.
Good afternoon, Todd.
I'm taking a look at the forecast highs for tomorrow, and there are an awful lot of 80s, 90s, and even a few hundreds out there. It looks hot if you get down in the southwest.
At the southern plains, then. Not locally, at
no,
any rate.
No.
We are finally going to see some heat crank up in there, but it's been slow in coming. The same system that keeps cool air anchored over the Midwest is preventing a warm ridge from moving eastward from the Great Basin and Rocky Mountain states into the Southern Plains. But it's coming, and it will be there for the next few days, and it's going to promote some very high temperatures. I think by tomorrow we'll see mid-90s, maybe upper 90s, and a few hundreds showing up Sunday or Monday as we get into the first part of next week. And to go along with this hot weather and dry humidities, low humidities, there's no significant precipitation throughout this period. So we don't see any rain other than isolated showers here and there through the mid to latter part of next week.
I think it was about a month ago that you took the tour of the wheat growing areas out
That area.
So you had a firsthand look. We never really talked about that on the air because you were not available that following week. But tell me what you think conditions might be like today and what this high heat might do.
Well, the first thing is the wheat was well ahead of normal, and the main characteristic we noticed on the wheat was that the head sizes were small. And that was made it very misleading for people who do the typical windshield surveys, because they see a lush-looking field of green wheat and assume that it's going to produce the way most lush-looking fields do, but not this year. Right now, the wheat is headed through most of Kansas, about 85%, 90% of the state. It's still in the filling stages of heading. It's had terrific problems with three problems. It's had dryness. It's had some disease problems. Streak mosaic is rife in the western half of Kansas, and that's going to temper yields. And then it's also suffering from this continued dry spell in the forecast, which is going to, with the heat coming along, is going to shrivel what we call shrivel the heads. The kernels which are trying to develop and the heads which have kernels will probably not develop very well. This will affect more than test weight. It'll affect the yields as well. And we think Kansas is still headed downhill. Nebraska and Colorado, the two states in the five southern states that have managed to keep their heads above water until this past week or two, the hot, dry weather and the dryness particularly has overtaken them, and they're headed downhill as well. So the hard red winter wheat crop looks like a very poor crop for this season.
And then round us out as we're running out of time with a quick look at the Midwestern weather for tomorrow and the next day.
Midwestern weather, it's cool. We know that. There'll be some showers, mostly cloudiness, and the showers will be minimal. However, the front that separates the heat in the southwest from the cool temperatures in the Midwest will lay from northwest to southeast, will lie from northwest to southeast across Iowa, southern Illinois, and that will be the focus of showers and thunderstorms about Sunday. So we will see some showers and Sunday, and we don't see the cool weather ending anytime soon.
We appreciate you being with us, Pete.
My pleasure.
Peter Levitt, meteorologist, joins us here on the Closing Market Report on Thursday afternoon. It's just one of a stable of five meteorologists that you can hear each and every afternoon during the Closing Market Report, not to mention our own meteorologist here on staff at WILL AM 580. And if you'd like to go back and hear what they have to say, you can always do that on WILLAG.org. You can sign up for our weekend newsletter there as well as our podcast. It's a great way to catch up on what's happening in agriculture. I'm Todd Gleason. You have a great afternoon.